Welcome, everybody, to Gardener's Question Time with me, Jason, and our resident gardening expert, Dave. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Jason.
Hey, good. This week, a question from Gary in Manchester. Gary wants to know how to get Japanese knotweed out of the foundations of his club. What have we got for him?
Well, that's a great question, Gary, and it's a question that I get from a lot of people. Now, one of the best ways to combat Japanese knotweed in the foundations of your club is to take that problem and talk about it on live television. Now, I'm really interested to know if Gary's had a previous case of Portuguese bastard at his club, because Portuguese bastard is a weed that can often lead to a nasty case of Japanese knotweed, especially when you twin it with the all too common lazy French millionaire's weed. Those three weeds together, they're just really nasty.
Well, it's a good point, a very good question. He hasn't actually mentioned anything there, but just to keep things on the clear side, we all know that the drug laws in Portugal are quite relaxed anyway, but I mean, I think this is taking weed to a whole new level, isn't it?
No, Jason, I think you've got a little mixed up there. We're talking about weed as in the stuff that you would grow on your lawn.
On your lawn? Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm talking about, weed, yeah.
No, mate, the sketch is about Gary Neville, and it's not about marijuana. Like, this is Gardener's Question Time. That was the whole thing.
Okay. Sorry, my lawn. Oh, okay. Wonderful question there, Gary. And thanks you very much, Dave. Let's move on with the pod then, shall we?
I got excited. I like Gardener's Question Time. But no, it was a so-called joke. Fuck these clowns.
Welcome, everybody, to another special edition of Born Offside, the new garden edition. In full flow at this moment in time. It is spring in the Northern Hemisphere anyway, so it is time to start shoot out, and which shoots will be threaded down the bottom. Yes, that's right, it's the title race, and it is also the relegation battle that we're going to be talking about. Mate, what a great weekend of football once again. Dave, tell us, I think there's only really one place to start, really, isn't it? It's the Manchester and Tottenham sequel that has been going on. This is another Marvel edition. Manchester United came out winners in this one with a Garden Foden goal after 5 minutes against Tottenham Hotspurs. But that was it. Just 1-0 and nothing else, really. Thoughts? How do you feel on this game?
Wow, that was quite the intro. And thanks for that. It was Manchester City who came out on top of this one, not Manchester United. We'll move on. Yeah, slip. We'll move on to them later. Well done. Stevie G, slip. Oh, Demba Ba. Yeah, mate, it was a sequel. And like all sequels, it wasn't as good as the first one. but it did threaten to be just as good for a bit. Like, we had another City goal within 4 minutes again. And there was a big part of you thinking, oh, here we go, in for more of this nightmare. And Clive Tilsley, who was doing the commentary on the feed that I was watching, really was hoping that this, because like you could tell Clive felt that he'd missed out midweek because he hadn't been on commentary midweek. And you could tell that he was like annoyed that he'd been put on the Liverpool game probably. And he was like, 4 minutes in, here we go. Here comes another seven goal thriller. And we were just six goals short. It was a weird game because it really could have been another seven-goal thriller. Tottenham had a lot of chances. Son missed one. There was last-ditch tackles. Eriksen missed a very presentable chance. City kept the ball and controlled, and they insisted on playing in those kits again. And I don't know why. They were even worse in the daytime. You barely could tell who anybody is. And Manchester City, I thought, quite deservedly won. But it was weird because it really did have an after the Lord Mayor show feeling about it, especially with, I mean, the likes of Foden playing and Juan Foyth playing at right wing back. And it was, you know,
it was much changed, wasn't it?
It really was much changed. But the only, I think my favorite moment of this game is when City only being 1-0 up and really, I think, wondering how they were only 1-0 up. And Potts got his lamppost out and he got Fernando Llorente off the bench. And you could hear the stadium go, oh, God, here it comes again.
God.
We're going to lose the Champions League and the Premier League title to the Fernando bloody Llorente. You could just hear the disbelief. And fortunately for them, he got nowhere near the goal. But I think you have to give both teams a lot of credit for playing again at a high level. City won the game and they'll be happy, and I believe they deserve to do so, and to play again at that level so quickly afterwards is a big credit to them. I think the biggest thing to come out of this game was the fact that Kevin De Bruyne hurt himself.
He did, didn't he? He's out, and well, nothing's come out of the Man City camp just as, but to see him hobble off just after, you know, still in the first half was a little bit worrying for them now and for their push for the treble, which of course they're still on.
On the single. Let's not forget they've secured the single and they've
got the single.
They've got the single. They're going for the double and the treble. Mate, just a small word on Kevin De Bruyne's exit from the game. It was a deliciously Kevin De Bruyne moment. So he injured himself, right? It's a shame and it's unlucky, and you can't help but feel that Pep must be on the sideline going, look, I told you what happens if I play him too often. He gets injured. I didn't want to play him, but you all made me play him and I didn't want to. And now he's injured and I hate all of you. And they're like, Mikel Arteta going, Pep, calm down. No, I don't want to calm down. De Bruyne is injured. But then the best thing about it is when De Bruyne injured himself, the ball then comes to him and he whacks it out of play. And then,
yes,
like, with complete impetuous, just, I was bullied as a child and now I'm a millionaire and I'm going to do what I want. And I was looking around going, oh, who's injured then? Because the velocity at which De Bruyne kicked the ball out of play, you weren't thinking, it must be De Bruyne because he whacks it out of play.
And he does. I think anyone other than De Bruyne would have passed it to the person who was on the line. And because there was somebody right on the line, I think he smashed it past. He could have easily passed it to whether it was, I think it was Bernardo Silva or something. And then said to Bernardo Silva, yeah, just put it out of play and gone down, right? He could have done that. But no, he didn't. He decided to just smack it out into Rose. Because he really did. I wonder if he hit someone, like, you know, because, you know, mate, people up there not always paying attention.
Have you ever seen that classic Not the 9 o'clock News sketch from, I think it's the late 80s, where they're, I mean, yeah, it must actually be the early 80s because they're making fun of John McEnroe. And like they do a at home with McEnroe sketch, and like he comes down for breakfast and he goes, how was your tennis game, John? My tennis game was good. Don't slurp your orange juice, John. I did not slurp my orange juice. Don't you imagine that, like, at home with Kevin De Bruyne is more or less the same thing?
Same kind of thing. Absolutely. Oh, dear. Oh, poor old Kevin. Poor old Kevin. He's had a turbulent season. He's had a real tough one.
Turbulent life. I feel like he's had a really turbulent life, KDB.
Poor guy.
Poor fella.
Mate, it was still a very enjoyable match and one that was worth seeing. I think Son's been played really well. I was surprised to see Dier in there. I didn't realize he was back.
I think
back.
Dier was surprised to see himself in there. Like, and he went.
I think
off.
He probably
he was one of those who was visibly like, oh shit, this is a Premier League football match. It's played at an extremely quick pace. Bloody hell! Oh, dearie me! Oh, that no, I'll be going off. And he went off, didn't he?
He did, yeah, 60 odd minutes.
Yes, which for a defensive midfielders don't go off after 60 minutes unless they've, like,
no.
At halftime gone, no. Gaffer, This is too fast. Sorry, Eric. No, it's just too quick, Gaffer. I've got to come off. It's too fast. I'm not ready, Gaffer. Like, yes.
Well,
we need him back, though. Mate, so I hope he gets better.
Well, he's obviously going to be back, because otherwise he wouldn't have been risked to be played in this one, especially from the start. But with mate, with Gazzaniga in goal, I can see what Poch was doing.
Sorry, I won't have that on this show. It's Gaza African American.
Gaza African American in goal, with Gaza the African, the African American guy.
No, it's Gaza African American.
Gaza African American in goal. It was no surprise that Poch elected to play with 17 players at the back, really, was it? So
we brought all the centre backs out. We had Sanchez, Vertonghen, Alderweireld, Foyth, and like Dier is a centre back on occasion.
True.
We had five of them on the field, and somehow managed to concede a goal to the shortest man on the field with his head, having had the ball passed to him by the second shortest man on the field with his head. It was ridiculously stupid goal to concede. Like, I think
embarrassing, wasn't it? Because that's Vertonghen. Is it Vertonghen? Really, I can't remember. Vertonghen or Alderweireld?
I think it's Sanchez, actually, who loses Aguero. I'm not sure who it lost, Foden, but like, Sanchez is certainly supposed to be on Aguero. If Phil Foden stood on top of Sergio Aguero, would they be as tall as Davinson Sanchez?
It would be close, for sure. So you do wonder, you know, what was going through Sanchez. I've still, you know, for me, Judge is still out for Sanchez. You know, still a bit kind of not sure about him. I think in a flat back four, he doesn't get in, does he? He's got Alderweireld, Tongan. Maybe if Alderweireld goes this year in the summer, then Sanchez has got a chance to come on in. But Foyth is doing really well as well, isn't he? So, well, we'll see. We'll see what happens with Davinson. I think all in all, you know, the BBC actually gave Edison man of the match, and rightly so. I think Edison played extremely well. It's the first time I've seen him as busy as he was. But the moment I thought that epitomized it was when Moura was through and Laporte came back with that sliding tackle, didn't he? I think that was really possibly one of the big moments that you thought, you know, was it sunny?
It was sunny, and it was noticeable how much better Laporte on Saturday was than Laporte on Wednesday was. Like, a lot better. But it was interesting to me how many chances Spurs were able to create simply by having a go at that City back line. Because City's, like, both teams actually played with a really high line. And, like, the ball gets compressed into, like, the middle third. The play gets compressed into the middle third of the pitch. And just one long ball over the top at any point. And it's, especially with Son and Moura playing, the City back line is really exposed. And Eriksen wasn't doing anything more complicated than just, I've received the ball in the middle of the field because play's broken down. I'm going to pump it over the top. He wasn't even looking. It was just like, over the top it goes. Again, you know, it was causing all sorts of trouble.
And he knew that Son, with his speed, his pace, he'd be able to...
Well, and Moura's quick too.
Moura's quick too, exactly. So, but mate, Manchester City, let's move on just very quickly. Manchester City, of course, with the title looming, this was probably, I'm going to now say that this is probably their toughest match that they've put to one side, because week they've got to go to Old Trafford. But mate,
this suddenly doesn't look all that bad. We'll move on. I think we're going to move on to Manchester United's result in part two of this podcast.
In part two? All right, okay.
But yes,
we can segue into that. But like, yeah, no, let's reserve a whole section for the Manchester United match, because obviously that was quite fun for a lot of us. So, the other team, of course, Liverpool went into Sunday's match knowing that they obviously had to go ahead and win their match. But they did so, and did so quite well against the Warnock side. Two win, Wijnaldum with a beautiful,
what a,
I thought,
finish. Very nice finish.
I know, yeah. He straight. He came in, came up trumps. It was 0-0 at halftime. It looked pretty. Liverpool were pretty much on top for the majority of it, or at least had the better chances. Cardiff still had a couple of chances there to be able to. There was that one chance with Morrison when they were 1-0 down that that really could have turned it.
Mate, chance is not a word that is appropriate. No. It was more than a chance. It was more than an opportunity. It was an inevitability that was somehow inevitabilized. Like, it was really. Mate, if Eric Choupo-Moting hadn't missed the chance that Eric Choupo-Moting missed the other week, I think we'd all be talking about it as miss of the season. Like, it is the kind of thing that, as a Liverpool fan, you've got to be watching it and thinking, well, we're going to win the title, because that's just ridiculous. The ball's come across the box to Morrison, who's the Cardiff centre-back, am I right? Who scored a vital goal away to Brighton. Who does nothing in his career other than put his great big shiny bonts onto footballs and somehow contrives to not only he didn't miss it, like he cleared it. Like it was backwards.
But it comes off his back, right? But it comes off the top of the spine. So like it actually, well, he's dropped his head. Maybe his head is so heavy that when he's run to the ball and jumped, his head's gone gravity. You know, he's just dropped and it's hit the back of the top of his spine. It's an unbelievable circus trick, and I don't know quite how he's done that. But
mate, can you imagine him at halftime saying to Neil Warnock? Neil Warnock is going, Morrison, what on earth happened there? And he's gone, Gaffer, I've misunderestimated the effect of gravity.
Like, or at least my head has. The rest of my body was flying through the air like Superman, you know. It was great, but my head, for some reason, just dropped. Don't know what I've got in here. Lead, gold.
Do you think Warnock would have accepted that as an excuse?
Like, he would. I think he'd accepted it with probably would have come out as well and spoken to the press about it. Well, you know, the lad Morrison there has got gold in his head, and that's the issue. But I thought it was a great match between two teams looking for the win, and you know, mate, it was just comical. It was really the only thing I can say in his defense is that Alisson is sprawled for it. He looks like he's going to get his to it, but doesn't. And in that split second, does he think he's not going to get it? And so therefore just Morrison just kind of goes, just drop my head, you know, and then it comes off the top of his spine. You know, it's just it's just funny.
Bizarre.
I think
it was truly very bizarre.
Yeah. But Milner stepped up first minute with a penalty, which I think was a penalty really, wasn't it? I mean, I've heard arguments on both. I can see why. Again, it's Morrison, isn't it? He's all over. Like he's giving Salah a body rub, I think. You know, he's going all oil on him. You know, I've got the oil out. You know,
It was horrendous defending. He was like you said, he was all over him, touching him, rubbing him, feeling him, the whole lot. Yep. Like, and Salah doesn't go down, and it's as if Salah goes, oh, for fuck's sake, I'm going to go down. It was like an accumulation foul. Like none of the touches and rubs in and of themselves were a penalty, but the fact that there were six of them, I think, felt like. And I was of the opinion, like, well, that's a penalty. He's just being silly. Like, it was a penalty for silliness. Like as if the ref was on. No, too much feeling him. It's just too much. It's, no, stop it. Don't touch him there. Penalty. Like, it's. Oh. It was a weird one, but yeah, Salah. But then Salah did go down. Like, what did Warnock describe him? Did Warnock call him a fairy? Let me look that up.
I think he said, okay, I've got it here, actually. He said Mo Salah could not have got much higher off the diving board, according to Cardiff manager Neil Warnock, after the Egyptian one. But, mate, he also gave him a 9.9. He said, I think at the end of it was a 9.9 Tom Daly job. So
I don't know. It was more of a flop than a dive, wasn't it? Like
yeah, yeah. No, just flopped. That's true. It was like a deck of cards all kind of just crumbled the last sort of, you know, like as if he just had enough, you know. Oh, this guy's all over me. I've said no, you know, and no means, all right, you know, as much as he wants it.
Drop to the floor. Remember what they taught you, Mo. If a man touches you there, just drop to the floor.
Drop and roll.
That's fire, I think, isn't it?
It is incredible. But, mate, up stepped good Milner. And what's up with the old man celebration thing? What's going on there? What did he do?
Well, he's old.
Yeah, so that's it, is it?
I think so.
Accused of being old.
And boring. All right, okay. He is commonly accused of being boring, isn't he?
Fair enough. Yeah.
There was an entire parody account, which I believe the parody account still has more followers than actual James Milner. But the parody account is like boring James Milner, and it tweets like very, very boring things. And apparently James Milner is a huge fan of that parody account. And in fact, joined Twitter in a bid to become friends with the person who runs that parody account because he loves it so much. But yes, James Milner is essentially an old, boring man.
Well, mate, I mean, excuse me. He almost looks like a little bit like he's like a blind person. Could he? I don't like it because when I saw it, I thought he was like a blind man's stick, you know, and he was sort of, you know, patting away at the ground. I don't know. Maybe I'm
possibly,
you know, but
mate,
anyway.
One of two options. He's either making fun of himself for being so old, or he's taking on the entire blind community. One of the two things.
Oh dear. Well, now I've seen it. Oh dear. No, sorry, that was pretty poor. Right, mate, let's so no real surprises in the title race. Between Man City and Tottenham and Cardiff and Liverpool on that one. Let's take a short break.
Before we do, who do you think is going to win it? City have got United away, Burnley away, Leicester at home, Brighton away left. And then Liverpool have got Huddersfield home, Newcastle away, Wolves home left.
All right. Well, last week you said that you thought Man City might sort of trip up on the away match, and I'm sort of beginning to think that absolutely. When you think about momentum, they've got this match away against Man United. I have a funny feeling it's going to be a 6-1 drubbing, similar to how it was two, three seasons ago, 5-1 or whatever. I think City will have way too much for United on this occasion, and United fans as well in the crowd who all want Liverpool not to win the title more than a single defeat against Man City may play a big part in this one in the crowd. But we'll soon see about that. But to be honest, when you look at the remaining three fixtures for team after all of those, they're all quite winnable. Like if you put them in the middle of the season, you would expect both teams to just completely win it. I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go with wins for all up until the very last day. Although, you know, crazy stuff happens in the Premier League. I'm going to stick with it. And I think Man City are the more likely to run away with this one. It sounds boring. But
also, Man City don't have two Champions League games in the middle of that.
Exactly.
United do. Yeah. Liverpool do.
Yes, exactly. I think that's going to play a really big part in it as well. So, I think so. And that last game at home to for Liverpool, you know, even if let's say something crazy happens and they lose to either United or Burnley, Man City this is, Liverpool, I have a feeling, you know, we've been saying that all season, that they coming from behind are much better, you know, that team that's just in the mire, and they'll be there to pip them at the stages. That home match against Wolves has all the hallmarks of a defeat, or even just a draw, when they might have needed was guarantee it. So that could be the one interesting sort of slip up. They go into the final day of the season with Liverpool 2 points ahead, and then they only get a draw against Wolves, and Man City gets a win against Brighton away. So I think I'm still saying Man City for this.
Tasty.
Yep. What your view? What do you think? What do you think?
I think you're probably right. I think City going out of the Champions League means that they can play the strongest player. Everyone was looking at that United game as the as the banana skin for them. And now it's looking like one of their easier fixtures because, as we'll get on to, United were pretty... So, mate, Leicester at home, maybe? They've already lost to Leicester this year. Jamie Vardy feeling like a twat. It's possible. Yeah. I totally get what you're saying, though, that once Liverpool hit the front, and, like, I don't know, the City team is weird because the City team have lost to Palace, Newcastle, and Leicester this season, which is, which I don't know. And just for me watching the City side up close the last few, like, we've had, what, three games against them. They are a team that do get complacent within a game. Like, they are so much better than their opponent that they forget to play on occasion. But then I really take your point about if Liverpool hit the front at any point, Liverpool will shoot themselves in the foot. So it's almost as if Liverpool need to overtake them on the last day, but you can't see that happening with Brighton being the people that City have to play against because, you know, City are so much better than Brighton. Oh, you'd have to believe that, unfortunately, City... The real shame is that someone's going to lose this title on 96, 97 points, which is just horrible. And I just feel like if that happens to City, they'll recover from it. But if it happens to Liverpool, I think the entire City might just jump off a cliff. Like, which is sad.
Hold within itself and, yes, be no more. It would be sad. I mean... I'm still not quite there on the sympathy route for Liverpool, but you know, from footballing terms, we got that Newcastle match, you know, with Benitez. I mean, good Lord! I mean, it still could end with Man City winning by 6 points in the end. With if Liverpool slip up at Newcastle and then lose at you know against Wolves, I can see that happening in a far more likely fashion than that Burnley slip up.
Wouldn't it be? Wouldn't it be strange if City end the year with the league title, which is the trophy that Liverpool want above all others, and Liverpool end up with the Champions League title, which is the trophy that City want above all others? Could they do a swap? Like, would we allow it? Would we allow them to do a swap?
Down a dark alleyway, you know?
Wembley Stadium, huge ceremony, invite everyone together, have a kick around and do an official trophy swap and say, there you go.
Trophy swap.
There's the one you wanted. There's the one we wanted. Off we go. Everybody clap and cheer. I don't see
Is there anything in the rules?
I don't
saying
see
that you're not allowed to? Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Oh. It's on. The giant trophy swap. Love it.
With that, let's take a break, mate. And let's come back and talk about the race for the top four.
Other English names for Japanese knotweed include fleece flower, Himalayan fleece vine, monkey weed, monkey fungus, Hancock's curse, elephant ears, pea shooters, donkey rhubarb, Sally rhubarb, Japanese bamboo, American bamboo, and Mexican bamboo. Fuck, that's a lot of names.
Welcome back, everybody, to part two of Born Offside, with the top four really hotting up now. This is taking on, it's taking on a bit of a crazy ride, which is not one that we would have expected. The top four positions just keep on chopping and chopping and changing and chopping and changing in a way that every single week that goes by, whoever's at the top of it, we keep thinking, yes, they're the ones. Yes, they're the ones. It's pretty unbelievable, really. And, mate, I think with the race for the top four, obviously we had Tottenham, Manchester City. I'm not going to say it wasn't a big surprise. Obviously, the result was probably a big surprise because we thought it was going to be even more, but it was just the 1-0. But that gave Manchester United and Arsenal the opportunity to catch them, and obviously playing their game tonight against Burnley. Well, everybody would have thought that it would have been a golden opportunity. Mate, let's start at Goodison, which is pretty much the only
yum.
Can start. Final result. The final And remember, Manchester United really needing a good win here to cement their possibilities of a top four. The final result here was Everton 4, Manchester United 0.
As the Manchester United chant at the moment goes, Ole's at the wheel, tell me how good does it feel? Not very. It feels
not
terrible.
Good at all.
And if you're Gary Neville with Japanese knotweed up in everything, it feels wretched.
Maybe Ollie wheel, but he's got olive oil all on his hands, slipping out everywhere. And the car is heading to a bridge, towards a bridge. And yeah, it's like one of those tall bridges, like the Golden Gate Bridge, I think. And it's heading towards it. And Ollie is at the wheel with oil on his hands. So tell me, how good does it feel now?
Horrible. Like, really bad.
Isn't it like Clive Woodward surely has to go. Now, I'm not a Man United fan, as you know, but we've got listeners who are Man United fans. I'd love to know what they're thinking at the moment and how they're feeling at the moment, because since Ole has been given the wheel, since Ole has taken the lead, they have been on an absolutely abysmal run. And not looking like they're going to finish in that top four, is it? I mean, if they lose to Manchester City at home in a couple of days' time, it's on Wednesday, isn't it? Mate, it's just going to be a complete disaster, really. They'll be lucky to finish sixth. There you go. I think they obviously will finish. They're miles away of Everton. Mate, let's start with the match. Lovely goal by Richarlison, I thought.
Lovely finish, but yet a horrible goal to concede, because any goal conceded from a throw, from a long throw, is so 90s. Like, it's just horrible goals conceded from throws. Like, Dean's launched it in, it's got a flick on, and Richarlison has saved the goal from being really ugly with his spectacular finish. But the goal, I don't like goals from throw-ins. Do you like goals from throw-ins? I don't like a knock-on either, mate. I don't like, you know why I don't like a knock-on? Because it says to me, Steve Bold, Martin Keown, Tony Adams. That's what a knock-on says. And I hate a knock-on. And like, it's a throw and it's a knock-on. Oh, Richarlison really saves it. Also, it was, you know, a goal against Manchester United, which helped it. But, I don't know. I don't want to see too much of that, please.
It was not a nice one. Taken very, very well. There was a bit of a debate about a high foot there. And I think Dalot, who's the defender who's there, if he head on that ball, then yes, there could be a shout for a high foot. But he kind of cares, doesn't he? He's like, just, you know, he doesn't really go for it. So, if it wasn't a reason enough for Manchester United to think, right, let's pull our socks up and go for it, they let Sigurdsson away through the middle of the park, get to about, what, 30, 35 yards out, and stand, and then open up the whole defence in the middle, and bang, what a whack by Sigurdsson. That was a gem as well, wasn't it, really? 2-0 after 30 minutes. Man United looking shaken. Really, weren't they? So,
yeah, I mean, they were wretched and horrible the whole way through. I don't want to touch on this too much, but I do want to touch on it a lot, which is Gary Neville.
Hang on. Not Salah and Morrison revisited, is it?
Yeah, I don't want to touch him too much, but I do want to touch him a lot. It's the whole Gary Neville thing, just because that's what it will now be boiled down to, is the fact that Ole's had to apologise and Gary Neville's gone off on a rant, like a full, proper, like, spectacular rant. And I think the part of it I like the most, well, the second most, is the Everton have run 4 kilometres more than us. Everton. as if Everton are a bunch of lazy bastards, which I don't think they are. All right, I get the fact that they're a lower club or a lesser club than Manchester United. You'd be hard pressed for anyone to argue any other way. But like, they're not an infamously lazy team, are they?
No, they combat for the Everton Cup every year. Give them a bit more, Gary. Come on. Speaks of them with such disdain. It's just, I think the whole thing, though, the whole rant is all just full of badness. He really is just completely pissed off. And yeah, I'm with you. I'm so happy.
Mate, and then the Japanese knotweed reference, which we've obviously built this podcast episode off of. Like, mate, have you ever heard of Japanese knotweed before? Like,
not at all.
He's got to have had a problem, no? Like, G-Nev in one of his big properties has got to have had a Japanese knotweed problem. I'd say fairly recently. And he's, mate, I've Googled Japanese knotweed, and to give it its proper name, its full name is Reinoiteria japonica. Other other English names for Japanese knotweed include fleece thrower, Himalayan fleece vine, monkey weed, monkey fungus, Hancock's curse, elephant ears, pea shooters, donkey rhubarb, Sally rhubarb, Japanese bamboo, American bamboo, and Mexican bamboo.
It is prevalent, obviously, at the club, and there's also a fact here on Google that says Japanese knotweed can grow 4 inches per day during the summer.
What?
Yeah. So let it go. It's obviously getting turned on at that club, because if it's growing 4 inches every day, wow, it's going to be filling up that club before you know it. May I put it to you that the ground staff have a lot of work to do on that pitch. if there's some
nasty case of Hancock's curse in here. Well, it's not Hancock's curse. It's pea shooters. Same thing. Get me that the donkey rhubarb. It's Japanese knotweed.
Like, right, let's get to work. Come on, lads.
Oh dear.
What are they doing down there? Oh, they're just combating the Japanese knotweed that's in there. Don't you worry. It's all right. I'll get sorted. Mate, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
If you're head groundsman stroke Manchester United's new director of football, what are you gonna do? Like, who are you gonna sell and who are you gonna buy? Mate, I'm gonna give you a minute. You could sell as many as you want to and buy as many as you want to. Realistically, go for it.
Good Lord. Oh, all right then. God, you've there a little bit. I would be saying that Pogba, I would say Pogba, let Pogba go. Pogba, I can't even say his name.
Pogba.
Pogba. I thought Matic was horrific. He was at fault for the goals. Mate, the centre pairing at the back of Jones and Smalling is obviously horrible. Yeah. Lindelof, they played him at right back, so they thought... Yeah. He was, Lukaku, just too fat. He's sorry, out. Mate.
No, mate, who are you going to keep? Good. Maybe that'll be briefer. Who are you going to keep?
Ah, now that's easy. Dalot.
Dalot. Rashford. Would you keep Rashford?
I'd keep Rashford, of course.
Lingard?
Probably keep Lingard. Yeah, probably. Just, you know, keep him in there.
Shaw.
Martial has to go. Luke Shaw. No, I think I'd get rid of Luke Shaw as well. He's been through too much. Too much crap has happened. But that leaves you with, you know, with people like McTominay, for example, at the back there. You know, I mean, yeah, keep him in there. He's all good.
De Gea,
De Gea. I reckon De Gea could possibly go as well. You know, I think I heard an interesting one on a podcast earlier saying, what about if there was an option for a De Gea and a Courtois swap for Real Madrid? Real Madrid has been interested in De Gea for a while, and they might be willing to let De Gea run down his contract, which obviously runs down summer, so that he can get him for free. But if Zidane really wants him straight away, then maybe just a straight swap for Courtois and Courtois in. That would be a good thing for Man United, I reckon. But apart from that, they need, and this has been a big, big
Fred,
throughout the year, they need leaders, right? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about that. Have any leaders in the club? It seems like a kids a play park with Pogba. Jeez, I can't say his name today. Pogba, you know, and having a joke and having a laugh and having a bit of a whatever, you know. And then when he gets out on the pitch, he just doesn't seem to be taking it seriously. But one of the big mistakes now as well, and one of the big people I'd see go, and this is ridiculous, but I think Solskjaer to go. I don't think Solskjaer is the right person.
No, let's not be doing that. He's only just got there. You have to honor a contract. Mate, Fred, you selling him?
Selling him, yep, absolutely.
Right, so, mate, what you've got left at the moment is, from what I can tell, you've got Courtois on a swap deal. You've got a back four of Dallow and so you've got Dallow in your back four. You've got McTominay, Lingard, and Rashford.
Yep.
I mean, who are they going to purchase? Like, realistically? What? Zaha?
God, Jesus. I mean, Bale? They need to bring in... that has been talked about, isn't it? That's been an option. Sanchez has to go as well, by the way.
Yes.
I don't think so.
Toodles.
Toodles gone. Lucas Rojo as well. Like, what's he doing there as well? So
Juan Mata.
Yeah, Mata and Valencia, they're both going, aren't they? Already. Oh, and Andres Pereira.
Oh, Pereira as well. Bloody hell. There's gonna be no one there.
Eric Bailly is still there, but man, if all them and Eric, what is that club doing? It's just bizarre. Think you can have an overhaul like that, and actually Solskjaer has come in and said that he's probably not going to change a lot of them, which I think is just ridiculous. But people that they need to bring in, yes, Bale would be a good person to bring in. I think they should go to Leicester and bring in Maguire at the back.
The slabbed revolution.
They should have got him straight away after the World. They should have paid 70. I reckon he would have gone from strength to strength and become something special. But now he's kind of lost because of all that talk and everything, it's probably got to him a little bit, and he's kind of lost over at Leicester. And I think he would be a real good come in. But mate, the thing is, whoever they go for, whichever club they decide to attempt to negotiate with, they're going to be licking their lips. No, it's going to be premium. They have to pay premium for absolutely everyone. The only real solution to this is do a little bit like Manchester City have done, kind of, and just go slightly below that top echelon of players and go 20 and 30 million youngsters, you know, and bring them in. There's that lad at Celtic that's been touted as a real future centre as well. I forget his name, but they say that he's going to be the next one, and he should be coming into Man United as well. So it's probably about time that they just throw away the scrapbook. They just throw the whole away and go, you know what? We've completely failed over the last 5 years since Ferguson left us. Let's throw everything away and let's start from the ground, you know, and let's bring in youngsters everywhere and say to them all, hey, you're not going to be champions this year, you're not going to be champions next year, you're not going to be champions the year after, probably, but, you know, by 2022, you'll be looking at really competing with a beautiful squad that is there to really show the world that you know, you can bring the youngsters through, because I don't think they've got anyone in their academy, have they? I mean, they've got this Mason Greenwood, Tahith Chung, but like, you know, they don't look...
Chung's hair is too big. Mate, the thing that really interested me about this, and I think we'll just talk about this quickly and then move on. The thing that really interests me about this is that all the problems that Manchester United have now in terms of a lack of work ethic, an inability to put out a decent back four. There was this fella called Jose Mourinho who was saying the exact same thing approximately 5 to 6 months ago, where he was saying they don't work hard enough and I haven't got any decent defenders. And we're all like, shut up, Jose. You've got all the defenders you want. You bought Eric Bailly, and like, you have to be a modern man and make them work hard and whatever. Turns out Jose was a bit right. Like, he was kind of correct. No?
Well, it's certainly going to raise his stock, because his stock was obviously rotten when he left Man United. There was nobody willing to take him on. No top sides anywhere in the world. Maybe this is exactly what Mourinho needs to get back in. Solskjaer to fail and for Manchester United to fail miserably. Yes, there'll be a lot of blame headed towards them, but maybe they'll start to see the reality of the fact that this team, this club, they're doing a little bit like what Chelsea have been for the last 5 odd years as well, right? Funny Mourinho being there at Chelsea as well during that period. But Chelsea have also been, that's been discussed on many occasions, that they are not, it seems like the players control the locker room. It's not the manager who controls it. So this could very well be it, and everybody might be turning around for the day, and who knows what are the odds on Mourinho coming back
low, to Man United? Very low, because while Solskjaer is complaining about having the same problems, he's doing it in less of an asshole-y way. Like it's the same complaints but nicer, like much nicer.
All right. Well, mate, look, how about we take a quick break from this and come back and off with the rest of the race for the top four with Arsenal against Crystal Palace.
Everton ran 4 kilometres more. Everton ran backwards and they still ran more miles. Everton. Theo Walcott scored more goals than United. Theo. I gave more TV interviews than United. Me.
Welcome everybody to part 3 of Born Offside. Mate, we're talking about the top 4 and we had a bit of a chuckle with the wonderful result up at Goodison Park. Mate, should we have another chuckle?
Oh, and go chuckle vision.
Let's chuckle all the way over to the empty crates and find out what happened between Arsenal and Crystal Palace. Dave, take it away.
Hello, Jason. Thank you. I would like to report on the fact that Crystal Palace did beat the Arsenal by 3-2. And that was not the full story, because 2 of the Crystal Palace goals were on behalf of the Arsenal, extremely embarrassing. The first one was scored by a man called Christian Benteke. Yes, the same Christian Benteke who you and I remember as a laughingstock, as the striker who literally could not buy a goal, who is in, once for other words, shit. Christian Benteke scored, and then the second goal, scored by Mr. Wilfried Zaha, who is not very, very good. But the defending from a certain Mustafi was...
Oh, my God!
Mate, I'm not joking to you now. I'm not joking now. Like, honestly, as an isolated incident of defensive play, the worst singular individual-based defending I have ever seen. It's like... horrendous. Like it's poorly positioned. It's like poor application. It's
judgment. It's poor judgment. It's
everything. Oh my!
Can I put it to you? Does Leno have a case of going up to Mustafi and punching him in the face?
Yes, because Mustafi tries to blame it on Leno. Which
absolutely. I can't believe he's gone and he's like rule number one. Of a defender, of a good quality defender, a solid, not even a good quality defender, so just a solid defender. Rule number one, clear your lines, all right? You don't leave anything.
Rule number one, fail. Give me rule number two. Rule number two,
your fucking job, pardon my French, and stop Zaha from getting past, which he also doesn't. Yeah. Rule number three,
bizarre.
See where your goalkeeper is. Before you start asking him to come out and pick the ball up.
Mate, it was totally bizarre. This long ball comes over the top and it doesn't seem to be any real danger because Mustafi is like actually reasonably well positioned between Zaha, the keeper, and the goal. And then the ball bounces and Zaha's trying to get onto it. And you have, like, I guess, a decision to make at that moment, which is do you attempt to hold Zaha off, or do you run after the ball? Now, running after the ball was much the better choice because he was closer to it, and he's and the ball is not so far in front of him that Zaha has any chance to use his greater pace to get past him. But Mustafi decides to stop and do the whole "I'll lean into Zaha" thing, and Zaha, all credit to him, goes, "Well, if you do that, I'm just going to run around you."
And run around you. Thanks, mate.
Zaha's like, "That's stupid. I'll just go over here." And he does and puts it in. Oh, mate, it's horrendous defending. I enjoyed it a lot.
Like, I think we all did. I think we all did. Even me, who doesn't care one way or the other for Arsenal. I've got no love nor hate for them. But when I watched that, I just thought, my God, if I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be looking at Mustafi and just going like, what is that? Because in terms of defending, it really, I just think it's horrible. I mean, if he holds his hand up as well, that was what really pissed me off. At least if he holds his hand up at the end and goes, or just puts his hand on his head and realizes and just says, shit, you know, I made a mistake there. I really did screw up. I thought Leno was closer. It's totally my fault because it bloody well is. But no, he turns around and he has a go at Leno, who's on the floor. Did you see Leno's reaction when the ball goes past him? Leno kind of becomes a scarecrow. You know, he spreads himself out and he stays there in that position, almost
Leno,
as if
Leno almost saves it. Credit to him, like he gets
true
as it goes through.
But like I think he sees Mustafi having a go at him, and thinks, "Hang on, yeah, he's probably right. It was my mistake." You know what I mean? Like it was just all wrong, and just. Wow. I mean, they deserve to lose the match just on that stupid little mistake. But as if it wasn't bad enough, MacArthur steps up and scores a third. Crystal Palace 3-1 up at the Empty Crates with 20 minutes to go. It's looking rosy. Aubameyang did get one back with 10 minutes to go, and you would have thought a grandstand finish from Arsenal, which they did obviously pile the pressure on, but they weren't able to get past. And Crystal Palace continue this wonderful record that they've got of beating top sides away from home, which is just, I don't see why a lot of people are talking about it, and because it's not a completely unusual thing. A team like Crystal Palace with pace up front, Townsend and Zaha up front, they're always going to cause problems to teams that sort of put a lot of pressure on them. But yeah, they're certainly doing the job on some of the big six this year, aren't they? So credit to them. I'm glad they've done okay this year. Hodgson lives to fight another day, which is of course is always also good. Mate, I know you don't like it, but a word for Mesut Ozil's goal. I thought, it was a good goal.
Nice. I mean, obviously, when VAR comes in next season, that goal will be ruled out because his eyes were offside. But apart from that...
Excuse me. Mate, what does this say for the top four race?
The top four race is ridiculous. I'm looking at it now. I know we've got the Chelsea game coming up tonight, but it's a good time to look at it now because now all teams have played 34. So Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea, Manchester United, this moment before Chelsea play tonight, have all played 34, and it's Spurs 67, Arsenal 66, Chelsea 66, Manchester 64. Now, and then the goal differences are 29, 25, 21. Only United's goal difference of 15 is really
crappy
and inferior. And so you're looking at it and going, it's still two from four. United are so bad, but still in it. And then, I don't know, I'm looking at the remaining games. So just to run our seven lists through.
The only top six, you can say top six clash in there is on the 28th of April between Man United and Chelsea. That's the only one
United have the hardest running because United have to play City at home.
The City match as well. Yeah,
they have to play City at home and then Chelsea at home, and then they've got Huddersfield away and Cardiff at home. So their last two are you really should win, but I can't see them winning. I can't see them winning either of the first two, and certainly not both of the first two.
No.
And but even it's in such a way that even if United were to, let's say, beat Chelsea at home, that would knock Chelsea out of it, you would think. So I think I think by virtue of the fact that Chelsea and United have to play each other, that Spurs and Arsenal are in the driving seat, especially when I look at Spurs' fixtures: Brighton at home, West Ham at home, Bournemouth away, Everton at home. You can't ask for much easier than that. Brighton are not looking to do anything other than just dig in and desperately fight for a point. West Ham's season is over. All right, it's a little bit of a derby, but they've been terrible on the road. Bournemouth season is over. And
it's over, yep.
And then Everton's season, Everton are terrible away from home and their season is more or less over. So Spurs should, I know they've got a Champions League and they've got some injuries that might come into play. Arsenal have got Wolves away, which I think is their really tricky fixture, because Arsenal are terrible on the road and Wolves are still playing like they've got something to prove a little bit. Mm. I think Nuno's a bit pissed off after the FA Cup. Then they've got Leicester away, which, you know, Brodge is, all right, Leicester, you could say their season is over, but Brodge is looking to do something. Brighton at home, which they really should win, and Burnley away. Chelsea have got Burnley at home tonight, which you really think they'll win. United away, which is their tricky one. Watford at home, which could be tricky, but Watford will have a cup final coming up, so unlikely to put out their best team. And then Leicester away. Not the most straightforward of fixtures. There's no doubt that when we've seen United lose away to Everton and then seen Crystal Palace go to the empty crates and win, that all four teams have got a loss in them. Like they've got a fuck up in there, and in fact, I expect all four of them to fuck up at some point, which really makes this the relegation replacement almost this season. Mm. Like
yes,
because two of them are going to miss out on Champions League, and it's big. It's a big thing to miss out on for both teams.
But this. And just on all the points that you've just mentioned there, if we talk about momentum, even though Tottenham lost that matchup against City, they still hold that sort of momentum with the obviously the new stadium bounce with that great win, even though they lost, but a great obviously aggregate win over Man City to push them through to the quarterfinals. You would imagine that, in terms of momentum, it's Tottenham's to win here on this one, isn't it? Not only are they in the driving seat because they're in third and they've got points on the board already, but that momentum as well, with Arsenal losing, well, Man United losing, Chelsea, flaky, you know, it should really be in Tottenham's hands.
And they've got more three points than the others. Three games at their brand new stadium where they haven't let a goal in yet, and
Man United have got three games at home as well, and the away match that they've got is against Huddersfield. So, it's take away the fact that it's at home or not. They've got Man City and they've got Chelsea at home. So, both of them, absolutely, like you just said right at the beginning.
Tottenham's big worry is the fact that they've got a Champions League semi-final in there and they're running out of players. I mean, you know,
that's true.
Kane is done for the season. Ali's still not fully fit. Winks, Sissoko, like, although they played very well, I thought, against Manchester City, the fill-ins, but fixture congestion could be a problem for Spurs. But I don't know, with the Brighton and West Ham games before the Champions League even comes into play, that could be kind of enough to cement it if they win those two, you feel, with one of Chelsea and Manchester United inevitably knocking themselves. I mean, and if Chelsea and Manchester United is a draw, that actually does both teams no favours. Like,
no, not at all. Absolutely. It pegs them even further back. Mate, you've got to be so happy with Tottenham's season. A team which for the very, very first time in Premier League history didn't spend any money in either transfer window.
Self-enforced embargo.
Well done, Levy.
Financial fair play this.
It's just great. You've got to be happy. I mean, I know that obviously there's a lot at stake still, and it would be greatly disappointing if they get knocked out by Ajax in the next round and then through some crazy, ridiculous reason don't make it through into the top four for whatever reason, you still kind of got to be happy, don't you? I mean, worst case scenario, they do get knocked out and Tottenham don't make it in the top four. How do you feel then as a Tottenham
fan? I'd feel horrible.
You feel horrible, of course. But like, given that because of the situation that you're in right now with four games to go, right? But like, given everything else that like Pochettino's had to go through and that the team has to go through and all the criticism that was thrown their way.
Is your question, am I happy as a Spurs fan or am I pleased with Poch? Because if the question is, am I pleased with Poch, the man's a saint. Like
can do no wrong.
I mean, he can do wrong, but he's never doing it. And I think any man who makes a cojones gestures of the size, like I think we've all seen that footage now of Potts in the dressing room post the miracle of Manchester, where he does the cojones, Diego Simeone.
The Simeone,
That's a Simeone. Yeah. But if you look at Simeone's cojones, when Simeone does it, the his cojones are the width of his two thighs.
Yes.
Poch's cojones are like, you know, we're talking albatross.
The length of
his wingspan. They are big ass.
They go up and down, mate. They really do. Whereas Simeone's kind of stay in the same place. You notice that?
Simeone's are more realistic. I mean, they're more realistic cojones, but Poch, those are some big...
More of a cartoon character, isn't it, really? Yeah. You know, from knee to navel, you know.
And a man with cojones that size can do no wrong. I love him. I love him and I always will love him. He's magic, you know.
No. He can do wrong, but he's just not. And that's
yes. He is.
I think he could do a lot wrong with those cojones. But he's
could do a lot of
those cojones in check. Well done, Poch. Mate, let's move on with the pod, mate. Let's take a short break and come back and talk very, very quickly and briefly about the relegation scrap. Welcome back to part four. What feels like an eternity for us. So for you, the viewer, listener, whatever, probably is going absolutely mental. Mate, we're here. We've got the relegation fight. You said it yourself. The relegation battle has almost sort of been replaced by this fight for the top four. It's over the weekend, Newcastle 3, Southampton 1. So Newcastle have pretty much, even though mathematically not 100% safe. They're pretty much safe now, aren't they? So, we know Cardiff lost, so they weren't able to gain any points on to Brighton. And Brighton got probably a very valuable and creditable draw against Wolves, stopping a horrible rot that they were in as well. Mate, do you see Cardiff getting out of this? What do you reckon? What do you think?
Well, the Cardiff were never likely to get points against Liverpool, and I don't think that's where they were targeting them. I think the one where they're really looking at is they've got Fulham, haven't they? Which I think that they really, you know, are fancying and banking on for them points. That takes them, because Brighton's draw takes them 3 points in front with a game in hand. Brighton's game in hand is against Spurs. I don't want to curse this, but you'd say probably Spurs are going to win that. So I think Cardiff need more than just to beat Brighton. They're going to need more than just to beat Fulham. They're going to need another point or three somewhere. It's not over, mate. It's a long way from over, but Brighton could probably do another two shut up shop, park the bus, and the bus that they found next door to their bus. And hope and pray, and they should be all right, I would have thought.
Yeah, so
it's not going to be pretty.
It's not going to be pretty. It hasn't been pretty all season, and it's not going to get any prettier, really, is it, down there? I you know what? I haven't had too much of an opinion in regards to Cardiff. It's mostly been negative, mostly been wanting Warnock to go back down. And of course there was the Emiliano Sala terrible tragedy as well that happened in there, which I'm not very happy about, but really, I haven't. There is something about getting that plucky sort of underdoggy kind of Cardiff side staying in the top flight. You know, there's something about keeping a team like that in the Premier League.
There's just wanting there to be something on it until the last games. I don't want Cardiff to stay up. I just don't want them to go down now. You get what I'm saying?
Trepidation
until the last day. I would like Cardiff Hearts to be broken on May 12th?
Against Man United. Yeah,
I'd like them broken then. Or, like, you know, I don't want them broken. It's too early. Like, let the affair play out a bit more, you know? You know, have a few more nights out. Remember kisses and cuddles, you know, day.
There you go. Let him go for it.
Don't break the poor fella's heart now. Lead him on a bit longer.
It's so true. Well, I mean, Southampton's match up at Newcastle, I watched this and Southampton were absolutely abysmal in the first half.
How have you conceded three goals to Ayoze Perez?
Oh my goodness. Just ridiculous. All of them could have been avoided. They were all just, you know, we were just falling asleep. Southampton were just falling asleep all the way through it. The only positive that I can give Southampton in this match was that in the second half, they did give it a good go. They were in control for large portions of the second half. Lamina came back after being out with a very long injury. He's been out for a long time with an injury. Came out with a beautifully taken goal. He came on as a sub at halftime and scored on 60 minutes. And really, Perez's goal on the 86th minute was sort of against the run of play a little bit. So, with the run that they have been on, Hasenhüttl has been doing a good job. I'm going to try and stay positive. They've got Watford up next away. That's on Wednesday. That's going to be a tough one. They've got the Bournemouth... the derby that's not a derby after that. And then they've got West Ham away and Huddersfield at home on the last day of the season. You know, I mean, it's obviously they'd like it to be wrapped up as early as they possibly can. I know that you want it to go on longer, but just as long as it doesn't involve Southampton, then that's fine. And, mate, when you look at Brighton's matches coming up, I know they're 3 points ahead. Mate, they've got Spurs away, Newcastle at home, Arsenal away, and Man City at home on the last day. It is not good. I cannot see them getting any points at all from any of those. If they do, it'll have to be some kind of amazingly heroic match. Well, Arsenal on the run that they, you know, after what they did and how Crystal Palace took them to the cleaners at the empty crates. Maybe Brighton can have a look at and seeing how they did that and take a leaf out of their book. But
Newcastle, I don't know. Newcastle at home, is there one where you would fancy them to get points? No?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's just that I see Newcastle on this new high. You know, their run of form has been really good coming into the end of things. And I see...
But away Benitez, from home... You know,
no, you're right. Away from home, they have not been great. So it's going to be, yeah, you're right.
It's going to be
points
tricky.
Could be there.
I mean, Cardiff have to go beat Fulham. You might fancy them to beat, and I mean, I know Palace are very good on the road, but Palace might be kind of disinterested. It'll be a physical game. It'll be a fight. The thing is stuff will happen. It's so unpredictable between now and then, and it's going to be fun. Someone's heart's going to get broken, and it could well be Neil Warnock's. I just want it to happen a little later.
All right. Well, let's wrap this all up. I think because relegation really is this is the only other things to fight for. The only other silly thing that we keep talking about as well is this fight for seventh place. Mate, we had a couple of matches in that sort of arena, that area. None other and most entertaining one was West Ham against Leicester as well. They were a very entertaining football match. West Ham 2, Leicester 2. It ended up Antonio scoring a lovely goal, I thought, and Vardy coming back and bringing it back to 1-1. Perez then late on the 82nd minute thought that he'd taken it for West Ham, and in fact he had a goal disallowed as well, which was definitely disallowed, it was definitely offside, but it could have taken West Ham up to 3-1. And then, mate, 92 minutes in, it is this this Barnes guy who Leicester have recalled from I don't forget where he was, but he was on loan out somewhere, wasn't he? And they brought him back in. And is it, or am I thinking of someone completely different? Barnes, he's a young chap, comes in 92 minutes and scores a gut-wrenching equaliser for Leicester City, making it 2-2 at the end of the match. So, highly entertaining football match. Anything to say about that one, really? Have you got anything?
It was fun, but it didn't mean anything.
No, absolutely not. Huddersfield 1, Watford 2. Gerard Deulofeu getting Watford's 2 goals. Mate, he's on form now, isn't he?
He wants to play in the cup final, doesn't he?
Yeah, suddenly, yeah, he's like, pick me, boss. And the final match of the weekend, obviously we're not including Chelsea-Burnley because at the time of recording, we're recording this before the match. Bournemouth 0, Fulham 1. Fulham getting much-needed wins just at the right time of the season.
No, not quite the right time, unfortunately.
Mitrovic with the penalty after 53 minutes. I wonder if any Fulham supporters went to that match. It's not too far to go down to the south coast of Bournemouth. But would you go? I mean, you got a season ticket. You've got your away match. You know, you might as well go. And look, they've produced a win. Yeah, good for them. Nice. All right. Well, anyway, all good, mate. That pretty much wraps up everything that we've got for this week's Born Offside podcast. We will be back on Thursday or Friday, I believe, to review the big one in midweek, which is the Manchester City versus Man United match, and also to preview the weekend's games as well. Mate, we've got some good ones coming up. Just quickly on the Man United Manchester City match, what do you think? What do you think is going to happen for this one?
4-1.
4-1, Man City.
I think City
to blast them away.
I think they win really quite easily.
All right, okay. And you've got and Spurs have got Brighton as well tomorrow. What are we looking at that for that one?
Nervy 1-0 win, like
a nervy
really
1-0
nervy.
Win. Got it down. There you go. All right, that's pretty much all there is. Obviously, tomorrow there's also Watford versus Southampton. Southampton with a good chance of being able to get this, but it is a way to Watford.
Are you still a bit worried? I am.
I am.
All right.
Wolves versus Arsenal on the Wednesday as well. That'll be one that we will be able to review. And on the Friday, when we come on, we will preview Liverpool versus Huddersfield, and then the weekend's matches, which. Tottenham have got West Ham. That's going to be a pretty big one as well. But then on Sunday, we've got the humdinger of Manchester United versus Chelsea. That's probably got to be the highlight of the weekend for that one. So
football.
Join us again.
Love it.
In abundance. Give it all. Mate, one thing I've noticed, we haven't spoken at all about the Championship. And the Championship
Mate,
has
Leeds are still in there.
Leeds are still in it.
In the Premier League, it could still happen. Oh,
mate, it would be wonderful.
Fucking up, though. Have you seen?
They have. They lost against 10-man Wigan? No.
After
10-man.
Yes. Oh. Yeah, you're right. 10-man yeah. Wigan after being 1-0 up and the sending off happening
at
in
home.
The 15th minute at home. Oh, it was excruciating.
Incredible.
Come on.
After the
Come on,
Bielsa's
boys.
Had.
Put it together. Come on.
We would love to see them in the Premier League next year. It would be absolutely great.
It's not Leeds. I want it to be clear. It's not Leeds I want to see in the Premier League. It's Bielsa.
I just want
to see Bielsa in the Premier League. They've
more
got
comedy.
Brentford away. They've got Brentford away, whereas Sheffield United have to go away to Hull. Oh, it's close. It's goal difference. Come on, Bielsa. Sorry, I'm down there.
Let's hope for it, mate. On the weekend, Leeds are at home to Aston Villa, and of course, Villa are the ones who are charging up from the back. There, the team that are really coming strong in there. But I think Grealish is out for that match. So, and Grealish has been a real fulcrum for them. Fulcrum? No, that's not the right word.
Falcon.
There you go. I'll use a different bird. Yes, a real falcon for them. We should randomly select different animals to go for. It's been a real lion for them, you know. Good falcon. On them, you know. Absolutely. Vardy the rat. We'll have something to say about that as well. Mate, fantastic stuff. We shall see everybody once again on Friday after, around Friday, a short time we'll record it.
Bye, everyone.
From us, bye-bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.